There are some things I did want to ask you about the Firestones, and an activation once, and that was amazing. And I just kind of had a pathway there, but I haven't been able to get back to it so well.
Right.
And I wouldn't say I've been trying, if you know what I mean, like striving to get there, but just really wanting to get
Yeah.
onto the Firestones, really. So I just wondered if you had any tips that you could offer, really.
Where the Firestones are for me is where the throne of and the river of fire comes out from under the throne, and on a, near that throne are our sort of thrones where we're seated in the heavenly places. And so I have engaged, well, because I've been there a few times, I guess I can just engage by thought because it's a pathway that I've engaged and built in me. One of the places you can get is go to Wisdom's Heights and go through the door into the into Zion in the mountain there is one way you can go. But it's a deepening level of experience each time I've been back. So, you know, what I first experienced was at a surface level, and that was amazing, just feeling part of and completely connected to the stones and more of the nine aspects of God's character that I just felt one with. When I went back, I looked at a deeper level and looked into the stones more to see nine ways in which God operates in terms of the kingdom and how he functions in the kingdom. And I have been back recently, and I was invited to go back deeper into it, and I went and sank into the stones. That was an interesting experience. I sort of went into it at a deeper level, but I can't really describe what it was. It was just an envelopment, and my spirit really engaged. But it will come out. I mean, I think what happens is you begin to absorb and begin to resonate with the frequency there and the colors and the different things that are there, and your spirit engages in it, and your mind just doesn't count. My emotions really engaged the first time I really stepped onto those stones, and the second time it was like a spiritual download into my spirit, and the third time it was just like going, well, I just find it difficult to describe, but I went into it at another level. But it's a place for us to come into maturity, really. I mean, that's what Satan, when he looked and was standing on the Firestones, when he saw our maturity, and when he saw the level of influence and authority we would have, not just in the realms of Earth, but in the realms of the heavens as well, he stopped reflecting out the revelation of that, and therefore tried to trade on it with the other angels to contain control. So the depth of revelation there about our destiny in terms of rulership and sonship is pretty immense. Now, if Satan had done his job right, he would have then released that revelation to us, and Adam and Eve would have received the revelation and would have, in a sense, ascended those stones and descended the nine stones into rulership, because they would have been seated with Christ in the heavenly places in rulership, having ascended the stones, and the three skins that they carried, or the three strands of DNA or whatever way you look at it, body, soul, and spirit would have come to form government, with the nine representing those of God, which would have formed full government. But of course, he didn't do that, and they didn't follow that course. So now we get to go back and re-establish the connection to those nine stones of government and join to form the 12. And what I found is when I went into the stones, I found that the stones were reflected in the stones that were on the crown that I carry when I'm seated on my throne, and they began to release things. So they began to release that frequency and the revelation out while I was on the throne. So I began to minister out of what I'd received. It's almost like there was a parallel between those stones and the stones in the crown, that when I engaged in it, they began to release frequency and resonance out of it. But you know, they are a key place, you know, of engagement. And you know, my encouragement would be is to create desire. If you cultivate desire around the ark and begin to cultivate the desire for that revelation of sonship and engagement with those stones, then ask for a mandate to go. You know, and if you get a mandate to go, then you can just present that mandate to an angel, or you can just take that mandate and by faith step into that place. Because I think it's one of those places that isn't just for an experience. It's got to be coming out of the desire of for sonship. Because when we engage there, that desire will connect with the revelation and that which was contained within the stones, and we'll engage with it. You know, and I think the first time I was taken there was a forerunner experience, and God took me there to show me the stones, and that was my first encounter in the realms of heaven. And I didn't understand anything. You know, it was just an experience, which was an amazing emotional engagement at a level with the nature of God, really, the character of God. But when I've been back, I've gone back with a more of an understanding of my position of government, and I've connected up with the understanding of the chancellors and different dimensions of government there. But because I've sort of connected with it, then I've engaged deeper and deeper. That would be my encouragement. You know, get a mandate, and then you can be sure that you can engage there. Hi, Regina. Okay.
Suddenly, feels I had to do things, but I found it then out, which I have never seen before. So, okay.
Yeah,
it worked finally.
You got anything you want to ask?
And I don't want to interrupt what maybe Jane has just on her heart. Is it okay?
Yeah, we were just talking about the fire stones, really.
Okay. Yes, I have been listening to one of the hangouts on the 30th of June to take people into your heart and take them into heaven. They have a little question concerning that. You say very often to cultivate, to carry people fully into your heart and so on. And is it just that I ask God to cultivate that more in my heart or to increase the desire? Well, I mean, in a way, I have been doing that by faith, and sometimes I also sense more like emotionally, but sometimes it's just by faith. And can you explain that maybe a little bit, can I already start to take them into heaven before I fully have cultivated it, or is it just more waiting to cultivate it and then go to heaven, or is it just like an overlapping kind of and growing both?
Well, it is about desire, and to take someone into your heart, you have to have God's desire for them. It can't be our desire for them. So we can't be motivated to carry someone within our heart for our desires or for us in any way. It has to be a pure motive, and therefore it's got to be for the desire for God's purposes, for their destiny to be outworked. And you can only take people either that God has given you a heart for, or that were in your sphere of influence, obviously family and different things you can do that with. But it's consistently stepping into the realm of the presence of God and carrying them with you there, and begin to seek for the revelation of God for them, and then you can begin to release that revelation. And by doing that enough times, you begin to connect with them in a different way, and you have access into their lives in a different way, in terms of to bless and to speak blessing and to speak favor and to encourage over those type of experiences with them. But it's one of those things you have to be committed to, and I don't think you could take a lot of people into that level of relationship within. You just wouldn't have the time to cultivate that desire with them and to engage it. You know, it's one of those things that has to be really, really, really the purposes of God for you at a particular time, because you would be motivated to pursue it and pursue God's purposes for that person. And the more you do that, then you can begin to step into God, and then you can look from the perspective of the beginning for that person, so that you can bring that into the day and begin to declare that and decree that from your mountain, so that you can also then begin to call forth that which isn't yet, but that which is always God's intention. And you can call forth as Jesus, as God did, you know, call forth that which be not as if it were. So you can speak into the present that which you know is the future from the past. And this is how this, you know, from God's intention from eternity. And then really look to engage as God directs you, particularly in terms of loosing people from the things that hinder them from that, from mindsets or familiar spirits or whatever, just to begin to take authority in that person. Now, there's a limit. Obviously, you can't control somebody and you can't make someone do anything, but you can try and create the atmosphere of the environment around their lives that would draw them towards their destiny and draw them towards God in a deeper dimension. But, you know, it's one of those things you have to be consistent with and perseverant with, you know, to establish. You know, and I think God will give you what you need once you begin to engage that, and particularly the wisdom to know what to do, what not to do. Because the temptation is obviously to try and do things in this realm as a result of what you see there, but you've got to be very careful to know clearly what a mandate is. In this realm, the best thing to do in this realm is to demonstrate the love of God and the unconditional love and the favor of God and the blessing of God, rather than try and actually do anything other than you've got an absolute clear mandate to do. If that helps.
I mean,
yeah. So, anything else? Any other questions?
This was very, confirming in a way. I was kind of, going for a few people constantly, and so this was confirming, to just pursue that, right.
Okay. Well, in everything, it is about God's desire, and that's what you're looking to engage with when you're looking to intercede or stand in the gap for someone else. You're looking to connect them up to God's desire for them and to their destiny and to the thoughts of God for them. And that takes time, and then you prophesy out of that. You can prophesy out of that desire and speak out of that desire. But because if people are really close to us, sometimes it can get emotionally quite difficult, and we can get moved by compassion, which is not necessarily coming out of God's desires. So we need to be really clear that we understand what the purposes of God is in any situation in a person's life, so that we don't cut across that situation or cut across what God is doing by trying to help him out and create more Ishmael situations, because we try and help God do something rather than help the person to go through the process with God themselves by supporting and encouraging and standing with them, but helping them go through a particular process to come to the end result, which would be transformation and change and transformation and confirmation into the image of God. And it's knowing, what is it that God is actually doing in any situation, because our compassion, particularly for loved ones, can move us to try and help them out of a situation that God may be using to transform them. So we have to be very careful to allow our emotional connection to guide us and lead us. We need to be really directed by the Spirit. But the more faithful we are and the more consistent we are, the more access God has got to work. So with, Okay. Anything else you want to ask?
After you, Regina.
You started something, Jane, and I think maybe it didn't reach Mike, so this was my main question today, if I'm on the right track there.
Sorry, I didn't understand that.
I think you started something when I just finished my question, and Mike answered it, and then somehow maybe Mike didn't hear that when you asked to hold it in your heart.
Okay.
No, that's fine. He did answer it, actually. I was asking if it was similar to what happens in intercession when you take someone into your heart. Yeah. But I think I understood from what he was saying before and afterwards the reply to that. So thank you. Yeah. No, that's okay. Thank you.
Yeah. If I transfer that now to Germany, I can just do it in the same way, but as a whole. So this would be I just do it persistently. Concerning my nation, my region, so it's the same protocol. Yeah,
absolutely. If you have any calling towards a nation or towards a region, then that would be within your sphere, and you look to cultivate that and grow that so that then you can begin to speak into it with more authority. You know, and again, some of these things are done behind the scenes with no one else knowing what you're doing, but God knows, and God, you know, the angelic realm recognizes the authority we carry, and you know, the next steps then is to get mandates from God towards particular things, to begin to call things forth, to begin to engage the angelic realm, to, you know, maybe to break the cycles that are in operation. You know, as God has a bench of three, so does the enemy, and the enemy always looks to block, rob, kill, and destroy, and sometimes we need to identify some of those things, then we can begin to break the cycles and open up the everlasting doors and to see glory begin to be poured out. But you're more likely to get clear mandates when you have cultivated the desire for something in your heart. But once you get the mandates, then you can follow the process through and release that authority from your mountains. Yeah. And do anything else that God shows you in terms of a strategy. Because, you know, we can get a strategy then for those mandates, which may well be doing something practical. Or, you know, it could be God put three people on your heart to email or to write to or to speak to. Or anything can come out of that, because God will then begin to make the connections in the realm of the kingdom with people and re-establish connections, and your fine relationship will begin to open up, which will facilitate these things to take place.
It might have been Atlanta. It was one of the US ones that you did last week. You were explaining about the three levels of the earth and the atmosphere and the heavens. And because someone was asking about where the dragons and the giants are positioned and how to deal with those. And I didn't fully understand the second part. I got what you were saying about not dealing in the atmosphere. You would let the angel, leave the angels to do that. But I didn't understand what you were saying about what, where the giants and the dragons were positioned, and I didn't quite get that. So I wondered if you'd mind just elaborating on that a little.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, what I can see is that the enemy always counterfeits and tries to copy what God does and then twist it. And the bench of three, in terms of Father, Son, and Spirit, are totally designed for blessing, for love, for government, but government that ministers love and comes out of righteousness and justice. Now the enemy will, of course, will obviously do the opposite. So he will be unrighteousness and injustice, how he works. And so what I've sort of seen is that the three areas work together. There's what we do in this realm, and the familiar spirits that operate in this realm within us or around us seek to get us to act in fear primarily. And in any sort of fear, what it really is doing is saying that I trust more in what the enemy can do than what God can do to protect me. And so all fear comes out of what if, you know, this happens or that happens, and it's a lack of trust. But what it is trusting in is that the enemy seems to have more power than God. Otherwise, we wouldn't fear, because with no perfect love casts out fear. Therefore, if we're operating fully in love, then there's no fear that can touch us. And as we learn to govern, then we don't need to be fearful. But because we're in a process, therefore fear is the trap that the enemy often uses. And when we're operating in fear, then we are worshipping the enemy. And literally what that does is that establishes the enemy's authority on our mountain areas in the realm of the kingdom of God, in the realm of heaven. And so our mountains there are our positions of authority, and we have our personal mountain, which is really who we are, and it's our position to govern, and the seven spheres that are below that, that we are to administer from that place. And as we operate in fear, and the enemy will attack us specifically to hinder those spheres. You know, he's not going to attack us in any area that we're going to have no impact in. So he's going to attack and try and hinder us ruling from the mountains and governing and establishing the kingdom through those spheres in our lives. So he will set up a form of worship that enables the dragons and giant ogres, different types of demonic force, to operate and hinder and block and restrict and rob and steal and destroy. Basically, that's their design. And so what we do here empowers them, and then they then empower the atmosphere of the earth to be a blockage. So principalities and powers, the principalities occupy positions or spheres of government, you know, rulers in wickedness, in dark play, all those sort of different levels of fallen angels, or I think most of them are sort of fallen angel type classes rather than unclean spirits, which are different. And so we have to realize that then creates an atmosphere over us, and then that reinforces the familiar spirits that are operating, and you get a vicious circle which goes round and round and round. And all it does, it just blocks the authority we can have in the heavens. It affects what we're doing here, and ultimately it can then go wider and affect culture around us. If more and more people get drawn into that over an area or a region, that can have a negative effect as well. And so we have to deal with both the atmosphere in the sense around our lives, so what we're saying, what we're doing, how we're speaking, our emotions, our attitudes. We have to make sure that they're coming out of a flow of the life of God on the inside, not out of the soul. And so we are responsible for what's flowing through our lives. So cleansing the gateways and dealing with those type of things so that we've got a flow of life around us is a real key. And then we need to deal with it. It's then looking to, once we've dealt with those things that operate in that realm, then we can look to deal with the atmosphere. So if you remove the ark, then you can remove what's formed in the middle. And that's the key, is removing what we do in this realm, dealing with what's going on, blocking the mountains. To deal with that, obviously, you need to know your authority and what you're called to do, and you come from a higher position to deal with whatever's blocking those mountains, and then release the resources that they've been hindering us with. Then we can then release the angels to deal with the middle layer, because we've removed the ark. If you remove one part of the ark, then there's nothing formed in the middle of it, and I think that's the key. A lot of people try and do intercessory things without actually dealing with the things that are going on the ground. A lot of people try and deal with the things on the ground without actually doing the things in heaven, and you need to do both so that we can see breakthroughs in our lives and breakthroughs in the things that are around us, you know, that we have authority over. But the enemy will just set up something that looks like God but will be in reverse. So, you know, there is a demonic bench of three as well as a godly one, and that's how they look to try and influence our lives. Yeah, that's right. It's essentially two. Anything which is a two forms an arc, and things manifest between that arc. So like the two wings of the cherubim on the mercy seat formed an arc for the presence of God to manifest in the middle of it. You know, apostles and prophets form an arc to establish earthly foundations. Kings and priests forms a heavenly ark to establish apostles and prophets before heavenly foundations. There's a lot of twos. You'll see a lot of twos and threes in Scripture, which are indications of where two things come together in agreement. Literally, you're talking about agreement. Where two agree, then you have a manifestation of that agreement possible. When we put our hands up to heaven in worship, we are forming an ark because we're looking to connect with the realm of heaven and therefore manifest the presence of God between us and heaven so we can step into it and engage into it. So there's a lot of things with twos and forming those arcs of agreement that begins to open things. You know, then you get three that forms, you know, because the third comes to form government. And then once you have government, then you can get a fourth agreement to open a window. And these things just, you become patterns that you can begin to see once you sort of recognize them. But they are important. But it's about us exercising authority and ruling from our positions of authority, and then we can then deal with whatever's hindering that authority being manifested on earth as it is in heaven, because we've begun to create the as it is in heaven. And literally, when I saw our mountains, church mountains, I actually saw temple structures on them, each temple having two pillars, like the pillar of Dagon's temple with Samson, that he eventually put his hands on and then destroyed the whole temple by pushing those pillars down. One pillar was fear, and another pillar was associated with the thing that fear linked into, and they formed worship, you know, and blocked us, and therefore we had to deal with any fear that was operating in the church, and we had to deal with the other attributes. So for us, in our mountains, there was fear and there was authority. In one of our mountains, another one, there was fear and pride. Another one, there was fear and unforgiveness. Another one, fear and materialism. Another one, fear and perfectionism. There were different pillars that were all linked that gave the enemy authority, and we had to remove them. And then the people who were on those mountains had to make sure that they were not operating in that themselves and have to be aware to look and make sure that that's not operating in the church and the enemy's not sneaking back in to try and reestablish that. Because as a church, where one person does something, everyone's affected by it, which is why we've got to make sure that we're operating in unity of heart and mind and purpose, and we're together with that one heart, because God looks at the whole, and you know, the manifestation of his presence is proportional to that which is open, you know, and that's why they're so important to make sure that we're operating together with that unity of heart, therefore he can release blessing. So, yeah. Hiya, Steve. Is there anything you want to ask today?
No, I'll just listen to okay. You guys.
Okay. Fair enough.
That those arcs and doors and gates and all that sort of thing is pretty relevant for us. So it's just learning how it all functions.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So is there anything more on that, Jane? Is that a bit more clear? Yeah, I mean, you basically need to do everything you possibly can. It means ruling from heaven. So those that are operating in authority in that realm can begin to release the blessing to encourage people, because the temptation is to think about it as a pyramid, so that those, say, Venture 3 are in heaven and then there are people on earth, but actually it doesn't work like that. Although it's a higher level of authority, it's a lower level of foundation that people have to stand on. So when you're learning to administer the kingdom in authority, you have to do it in a servant-hearted way, and you have to serve people, and you have to be willing for them to stand on the foundation that you're providing, and therefore you are releasing them. And so when you're doing things from the realms of heaven, if you're binding people to the purposes of God for their life, you're looking to release them into freedom, not to control them into doing things the way you want them done. So everything that you do has to come out of the blueprint that God's given, not out of, well, what will make it easy for us as a church, or what will make it an easy life for leaders. And the reality is we need to be there to support people and to have the heart for people to be in their destiny and outworking their destiny. Therefore, the church or the ecclesia is really not a structure as an organization. It's a body that needs everybody functioning. And the shape of that body and what it looks like will be determined by the functions of the people who are in it, not a vision that we have that we try and get people to fit into. Because, you know, if you try and take round pegs and put them in square holes, or square pegs in round holes, they don't fit. They don't work. And therefore, it's finding, okay, what shape are you, and how can we facilitate you to be able to do that here with us? And actually, there may be some people who don't actually fit, that they're not actually designed to be with you because they're called to be somewhere else. And so we encourage those people to find the places where they are called to be, so that they can actually outwork their destiny there. And therefore, we must always hold people lightly, because I think God wants to move people in the right way to learn certain things in certain places and to gather that. Because if we see the church as a something that is there to provide security for us, and then we have the wrong purpose for it. It's there to release people into destiny, and we need to encourage people in that. And so, you know, what I see is that we need to be in leadership releasing people, and therefore our function is to be carrying them before God and seeking to call forth their destiny, and therefore to loose them from the blockages that hinder their destiny. And so we begin to prophesy out of destiny. Now, obviously, there are blueprints that God gives, and in those blueprints, God calls people to be involved. But again, when people are operating in authority that God's given them, we have to encourage them to do that. So, yeah, we have a bench of three, but we also have a group of seven who do the sort of ministry to the church, if you like, the body. And then there's the ministry of the church, which we have effectively a council of 12, which is really more about sort of the mountains that we have authority over and how we're going to administer those mountains out of where we stand and out into the community and out into the world around us. And depending on what level that is, that could be very local, or it could be regional or national or even international. But it's all about releasing people and encouraging people. So yes, we can pray, yes, we can teach, yes, we can provide ministry opportunities. Sometimes you have to tackle things absolutely head on. When you identify that there is a dragon operating over a particular church mountain, and that dragon has authority because people have been operating in fear, you have to bring that out into the open. You have to seek repentance and renunciation of things as a body. Now, sometimes that means we go to the courts together and we deal with things judicially in the courts, and then that gives us a mandate to deal with the dragon. But you have to get agreement. You know, I can't just go into the court on my own and take authority over everything when there are other areas of authority that people have. You have to get agreement between heaven and earth. That's the bringing the three and the one together. So the function in heaven of the king, priest, and the prophet, and those functions of the four faces of God, need the priestly function to come into agreement, which in the past, that's been the battle. The priestly function or the pastoral function has been in competition with the apostolic, prophetic, kingly rule. Because it's all about, oh, you're not caring for people, and it's all, what about the people, what about the people? And the reality is what we should be saying, we need to put God first and give him first place, and then God will actually deal with the situation with people. It's again all about fear, and the fear creates the access for the enemy. And we've seen political spirit and the religious spirit trying to influence and control through Jezebel and all those sort of things to try and block what God is doing. And so you have to come in the opposite spirit with it, which means in agreement. You have to find unity in agreement. And once you have unity in agreement, you establish that unity in agreement, then you have a window to pour out blessing through and to see those things defeated. And so we tend to three of us would get revelation from the realms of heaven, bring it to the relevant groups here, look for agreement. Then if there's a judicial situation to deal with, we would then go back into the courts together, seek for what the accusations are and what the blockages are, what the enemy has access to do, then we repent together. And we all own our part in it. And then we remove whatever the enemy's got, because we've brought everything into the light. Then we can then go back and deal with that in the realms of heaven. And so you have to do this in that way, really. So, okay. I mean, has that sort of clarified it a little bit more? No, it's not. You know, and it has to be a culture of honor where you create that environment where you're dealing with the problems, not dealing with the people. Because we're not accusing people. We're looking at the spiritual dynamics that create the problems that we all then are affected by. And so we create an environment where it's easy to actually own